everyone. This is John Campbell introducing Miracle Hour on bbsradio.com. Welcome to our listeners all over the world on this beautiful, wet, freezing cold English evening where I am over here. And I'm sure the weather's a lot better where you are. And the first thing I'd like to do is to say that last week, while I was away on a little vacation with some of my family, my beautiful wife stepped in at very short notice. I'm sure you all noticed a different tone and some dulcet Australian tones coming over the air, and she did a wonderful job, and amazing to hear her, and I was able to listen in, which was really exciting. So I just wanted to thank her for that and for the wonderful way she brought everybody in, and it was a great job. So hope you all enjoyed that. And also, while I'm at it, to wish Don a great vacation, because he's vacating with some family week. So he's away from the station, and Seth stepped in and doing a great job there. And tonight, or this afternoon, wherever you are, I'm really thrilled to invite Dr. Jane Major onto the show. And Jane is going to talk to us about her work, which I think is incredibly needed and very interesting what she's doing. One of the things which I know is quite horrendous at the moment in the world, in the physical world anyway, is the level of divorce that's happening. And although this is Miracle Hour, there are miracles to be had in all of these things. And the other thing is that the amount of conflictual divorce is the sad case, and there's a lot of very spiritual divorces, and there's some amazing literature out there about those. But there's also the other side of the coin, and Dr. Jane Major is doing some amazing work helping parents and children and families to get through some of these things, and she's going to talk to us about that work tonight. And if anybody wants to call in, the numbers are there for you. Please feel free. From the US, it's free phone 877-876-5227. And from Canada, it's free phone again, 888-815-9756. So without further ado, I welcome you onto the show, Jane, and it's great to have you here.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here, John. Thank you for inviting me.
And Jane, Mary and I first came across your work, really, when we were browsing the internet, trying to get some help for ourselves, you know, with some of these situations that sadly arise. Could you tell us, first of all, a little bit about your own background, how you got into this work and where that all started, a little bit about your own history? It's something I love to do, and I know people like to hear about those things. So would you like to do that for us?
Certainly. I'm happy to do that. I became interested in parent education because my husband and I adopted two very severely abused and neglected foster boys, and I discovered, aside from the challenges that they were presenting, is that I wasn't a very good parent, and I didn't understand why, and it was very obvious that my husband was a much better parent, more effective than I was. And I needed a doctoral dissertation topic at that time. My doctorate's in philosophy of education. I've always been on the educational side of things. And I did it on parenting. I thought that I can't be the only person in the world having a problem being a parent. And I did a book called Breakthrough Parenting, Moving Your Family from Struggle to Cooperation, to show people how to be positive, wonderful parents. And so that was the impetus for it.
Wow, okay. And what was your background before that, Jane? You know, tell us a little bit about how what you studied in when you first left school and a little bit about that.
Well, I was interested in education and learning and pursuing this doctorate in education. When I left UCLA, I started teaching parenting classes all over the city of Los Angeles to find out what do other people and other cultures and other kind of demographics, what kind of parenting problems are they having and what do they need? And out of those experiences of teaching families, parents, I evolved this breakthrough parenting curriculum. I also found that people are constantly seeking better ways of being parents because they often run into such difficulties. It's very painful in the family to see things not working out.
Yeah. Yeah. And did you find with your own, when you started getting, I mean, did you study at something? I mean, apart from studying education, I mean, presumably your only experience of parenting was from your own being a child, I guess.
Well, my being a child was very problematic in terms of my becoming a good parent later on because my mother was, nobody knew it, but she was moving into schizophrenia or was schizophrenic. And so I wasn't very well socialized with no eye contact and little conversation or involvement in my life. I grew up with a lot of parallel living, and thank God for my father, who was no intellectual by any means, but he did supply for the family in wonderful ways for which I'm grateful. But that's what set up my situation. I've taught parent education classes for 25 years straight, 50 weeks a year. I have a 10-week curriculum that repeats itself 5 times a year, so people can come in at any time. And I work with them in the key kinds of qualities and skills that they need to be wonderful parents. And that's why I call it breakthrough. They get a breakthrough.
Right, right. And did you design these, I mean, or did they evolve sort of organically? I mean, how did they come about?
Well, it came about a lot of it from my academic studies because I needed to find out what of the finest minds in the world ever said, to what end do we parent children? What is the goal? And then I read many, many how-to books, and I discovered that I didn't think any of them, well, they all had really good ideas, that I didn't think any of them presented enough of a cohesive philosophy of being a parent. And that's where I think that I have a really excellent contribution is how do you live your life? How do you live a self-actualized life and be in a family? How do you evolve everybody in the family and not just the children? So it's really a personal growth program that I put together.
Right. So your parenting classes actually are experiential. I mean, do people get into kind of feelings and all that kind of stuff during the classes?
Oh, certainly, certainly. And yeah. I do a lot of role playing. Parents will bring their problems, their discipline problems, and I will have them role play in the class so they practice the techniques on situations that they actually are dealing with their children. I think that's an extremely effective technique.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that really hit me when I started to look at this was the obvious, which is obvious, you know, until recently there have been very few resources to actually get parenting classes. And I know when I started my own conscious journey about 10 years ago, that was one of the first things I did was to seek out a group parenting class situation. I think the frustrating thing was that my wife at the time didn't join me on it, and that's what I really wanted because I recognized this was a two-way street. But the first thing I realized was that, you know, we don't really have any way of parenting until we get into something other than our own model of how we were parented. And I think this is very often that causes the sort of repeated patterns that happen in family systems.
Yes, well, that's the case with me, is that I grew up so under-socialized, with my family of origin, that when I was assuming an adult role being a parent, I had no clue because I had so little exposure to the kinds of positive parenting. But, John, you're very much the exception that you did go to a parenting class. What I've been absolutely appalled at is how bad things have to get in a family before anyone seeks out a parenting class. They'll go to therapy in a heartbeat, but they don't realize that therapy doesn't provide the kinds of skills and knowledge that an educated course would do. So I really wish this would be a lot more proactive about seeking help, and instead of waiting until it's absolutely a disaster in the family. And then somebody often has to tell them to go, like a judge or a social worker or something like that. People just don't realize the benefit if they just made a study of their families, how to be the best parent.
Well, yeah, thank you for that. But for me, it was kind of, well, you know, but first, okay, the thing I want to say is I had to wake up first. I had to wake up to see what had been going on, you know, and when I woke up, I was shocked. So then I was eager to do whatever I could. And in my case, I definitely ran it parallel to getting to therapy as well, because, you know, I think we spoke a little bit before when we were talking last night, is that until I got to look at that, it's like, you know, if we don't look at that, we've got a four-year-old trying to parent a four-year-old. So I had to do, at the same time as doing parenting classes, I had to do some work in order to re-parent myself, because I'd never been parented, like so many of us.
Well, this is, yeah, and my case also. So I've just had enormous benefit from therapy over the years. However, when parents have their feet on the fire and things are, the house is burning down, they need more than just therapy. They need to know how they can get a breakthrough from the dysfunctional system that they've got going. And there's a very important place for learning the kinds of win-win problem-solving skills, the how to protect self-esteem, how to communicate clearly and assertively so people understand us. Basic things that we didn't learn in our childhood.
No, that's right. That's right. Yeah, and looking at the whole family system, because, you know, I think until we look and see the system from which we came, we don't understand what happened, you know, and very often some of these, and I know we're going to talk later on, I'm sure, about the parental alienation thing. You know, a lot of people don't really realize what happened to them until way into their adult years.
Right. Right. And without a good foundation, obviously, as adults, we flounder. We pick inappropriate people to go into business with, to have children with, to marry, and the whole like, because we don't really know who we are.
That's it. Well, it's so good to hear you say that, because I think that is the thing. Until we know who we are, you know, it is scrambling in the dark. And one of the things I think is wonderful about your work, from what I've seen in your website, et cetera, and the articles you've written, is the help you're giving to families, children, and parents where they've come from a broken marriage, and where very often there's high conflict, which often is a result of an incompatible match from day one. And that's what I'm starting to see is a very common denominator in high conflict breakups, is where there's been a tremendous incompatibility. And if it's gone on for many years, there's been a lot of stuff buried away there. So can you tell us a little bit about how you work with that and your experience with that?
Mm-hmm. Well, John, I'm currently writing a book called How to Tell If a New Relationship is Likely to End Up in a Disaster. I'm doing the research on it right now, and it's really profound. What happens with people? In my classes, I've asked, in my divorce and child custody class, that's involved, everybody there is involved in a huge family law fight. Were there any signs early on that this was, you know, any red flags? And they all say yes. And what intrigues me is, why did they go forward and end up having children with somebody who would use them and abuse them and their children too? And what is it that is that mechanism that we don't protect ourselves, that isn't sufficiently developed, that will go for somebody that is, you know, a flim-flam artist that is, you know, that runs a con on us, and we're just so gullible, we go for it. But I've been doing this Thursday night class for many, many years, where everybody there is involved in a litigation in family law court. And over the years, I've discovered the amount of parent alienation that is going on the part of the very disturbed parent, targeting the healthy parent and undermining the child's actual mind and brain and stealing the child's will from them by routinely brainwashing the child to hate and despise and be horrible in their behavior to the targeted parent. I had many of these parents in my classes, and they're just obviously in a world of hurt. Just don't know what has hit them because, you know, what did they ever do to deserve this kind of behavior? I tell them it was just a train wreck that was ready to, going to happen regardless of who this person married and had children with, that this would be the result. Because there are very sick, disturbed people that just have their minds together, their morals together with baling wire and bubble gum. They, when anything big happens to them, like a divorce, they just become unglued and become so reactive and punitive that it's beyond the pale of decency.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can really understand that, and that's what, that's what I'm seeing now, you know, is that when eventually the parent who's been targeted decides enough is enough, and I'm leaving here, and is looking really for just peace and equal parenting and all the rest of it, invariably the deserted parent will become incredibly vindictive, and that's when all the problems seem to start. You know, that it's almost like you have committed a crime by getting out of an unhealthy relationship, and you shall be punished till your dying day type of thing. That is, do you have that kind of situation in your classes?
Oh, over and over and over again. That's the number one client that I have, is that they've just been hit between the eyes with a 2x4, and they're seeing stars, and nothing makes sense to them. And then, as if that isn't bad enough, they try to resolve their problem in family law court. Now, that's a can of worms, if there ever was one. It really makes a difference how people present themselves and show up and what attorney they have to represent them as their advocate. There's many, many devastating, it's the e-ticket ride on the roller coaster from hell. It is a problem getting any kind of justice or any kind of fair decision through the family law courts, because they don't understand. The family law people, lawyers and judges, went into law because they weren't that interested in the psychological mechanisms of the human condition. And now you have them in a position to be making judgment calls over very complex and difficult psychiatric issues that these parents are bringing to court. And the opportunity to get it wrong is, and the opportunity to exploit the situation because of the high emotionality of it, is very, very grave.
Well, that I can definitely understand and definitely concur with that. It has shocked me, not only the attitude lack, you know, I'm always a little bit, I don't want to sound unkind, but there's something about some people in that profession where, you know, if you can actually go out and receive money to defend somebody who you know in your deepest end and every other person on the planet knows is guilty of something, you know, it brings into question the whole morality of the actual profession. Not to say there's no exceptions to that, but when these cases have come before them, and I've seen the lack of a understanding and their ability to be conned by an alienating parent or a disturbed parent, you know, who is so desperate, because they're hung up on this winning and they're wanting to beat and they want to act out all their resentment on the other partner with virtually what appears to be no consideration for the child at all. And then to see judges making decisions which don't seem to have any thought for what's best for the child, you know?
Yeah, it's frightening. It's just as frightening. I just read a book, by the way, a Harvard professor, Martha Stout, who wrote a book called The Sociopath Next Door, and she makes a big point that 1 in 25 people is a sociopath, which means they have no moral conscience whatsoever. And it is never about the children. It is about winning and domination with these people. And there's so much more frequency in our culture than we ever, ever thought about these truly disturbed people. So, yes, it's all about winning and domination, and they don't have the ability, they don't have the moral conscience to actually do what's right for a child. But everybody is there to serve them and their interests, not for them to be taking care of anybody else.
Exactly. And I mean, it's really, really frightening to think that there are a lot of those sociopaths in the system as well, you know, as judges, as lawyers. I mean, I saw a wonderful title of a book. I can't remember where I saw it now, but it may have been from you. Was Snakes in Suits. And it was talking about, it was called Snakes in Suits. And it was talking about these people, you know, who end up in positions of power and authority, and you see it all the time in government, etc. But when it comes into these areas where children are involved, and they get caught up into the winning and losing themselves, you know, it is terrible. And I still think that a lot of that comes from, because they themselves are wounded, you know, that's clear. And they will unconsciously, and this is what I've observed anyway, they will unconsciously kind of act out their anger, which is filtered through their own unhealed experience. And that's why I think we get some horrendous decisions made by judges and social workers, etc., because they're actually, you know, filtering through, and I wanna underline that it's unconscious, so they don't know they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the part that really frightens me, and even the psychologists, you know, that are often engaged to pass judgment on this. I mean, I've got great respect for the field of psychology and therapeutic processes. I really believe in it on one rider, and that's that it's healthy ones, because that mm-hmm. profession itself can attract people. For the sake of avoiding looking at themselves, they focus on others. So the only ones I want to have anything to do with are the ones that have done their own healing. And it comes to that old, whether it's a scripture thing or it's a spiritual thing, you know, healer, heal thyself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is
so
important.
That's so true about normal people. But when you start getting into a situation where a person is actually so disturbed that they will literally brainwash a child to hate a parent, and that parent's parents, the grandparents, and the extended family, and all of the people that love that child and could provide a loving, nurturing environment for that child, is one of the most devastating crimes on the face of the earth. And because it's so emotional, there is massive confusion about what is parent alienation and what is parent alienation syndrome. Parent alienation is what a parent does to a child where they talk badly about the other parent in such a way the child grows to be afraid of that parent or hates that parent and now becomes an instrument of the most disturbed parent. And when the child has crossed over into truly hating that parent and fearing the healthy parent, we call that parent alienation syndrome. There are 8 characteristics that nobody really disputes of this syndrome. And when children are manifesting those characteristics, they are brainwashed. They are not of their own mind. Children would never choose voluntarily to treat a parent in this horrible way. This is something their mind has taken away from them. One of the coolest things that could be done to a child, because they're so suggestible. And yet there is within the professional community massive confusion over what is past. What is parent alienation syndrome? What is parent alienation? One is what the parent does, and one is what happens to the child as a result of it. I've written an article called The Causes, Cures, and Controversies of Parent Alienation and Parent Alienation Syndrome, to help people, professionals and lay people alike, understand the complexity of this. And it is complex, but it isn't hard to understand. There's just so many people throwing confusing ideas and out there that it isn't hard to understand what this whole phenomenon is. And if people would like to get that, they can go to my website, which is called stopparentalalienation.org. That article is there, as well as a the cable show that I did with our president of Stop Parental Alienation of Children on that site. It's a very valuable site. If anybody is caught up in the problem, you need to educate yourself about what it is and what can be done about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is so true. And, you know, again, I think the greatest knowledge is always coming from your own experience, you know. And what I found, I mean, in my case, I definitely experienced that from my mother, you know, who continually told me that my father didn't care about us, you know, that's why he was traveling abroad all the time when he was working and bringing in he was the sole breadwinner. And, actually didn't love us. And, you know, and what did I do? I withdrew from him. That's what I did. And I withdrew from him, and because I believed it. In my case, I have to tell you, I woke up to what was going on. I don't know why I did, you know, but I was only quite young. I must have been about, I guess I'd probably been about 12. And when I woke up and understood what was going on, you know, I then got angry, even as a 12-year-old. But of course, what I did, which again is probably not a healthy thing, you know, and it set me up for a lot of codependency type of behaviors. But I wanted to make up to my father for that lost time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'd do things like I'd string up, you know, welcome home kind of sort of thing, you know, when he coming back from one of his trips and all the rest of it. And of course, what happened was I turned against my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, even that's one of the things I wanted to explore and see what your experience is, because there will be, I was always an inquiring young child. I was always asking questions, you know. I realized pretty early on that the education system didn't really suit me, and a lot of questions to ask about that. But when I actually woke up, and then I have, you know, I'm not going to hide the fact I really did get angry with my mother, you know, and I can remember having, you know, toe-to-toe shouting matches with her at 13 years of age, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and to an outsider, and my father never, ever, you know, tried to do the same thing to me as she had been doing, you know. In fact, he would make excuses mm-hmm. for her and all that kind of stuff for her behavior. But there are cases. Now, what would you say when one of these young people wake up to what's been going on, and especially when there's been emotional abuse, sometimes physical abuse, even sexual abuse, you know, which is something which has really blown my mind, is the number of people in the professions who don't understand what sexual abuse is, you know. I mean, that's an amazing awakening to me, you know. It's almost like they think there has to be a case of sexual intercourse for sexual abuse to take place, but that's not true at all, as you I'm sure are aware. But what happens then when one of those young people wake up and then they by themselves, you know, they get angry and they don't want to have anything to do with that parent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then they get labeled, the targeted parent gets labeled just for supporting that young person in trying to extricate them from that situation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're bringing up the enormous difficulty of understanding this, and you are really the exception to be able to withstand the brainwashing, because most kids can't. And also in families, it isn't uncommon for one child to be the focused child to be brainwashed, and the others are sort of let go. They see it, but they're not targeted. As, you know, these are very sick people, and they don't, if they're truly a sociopath, as many of these people are, you know, they die a very lonely life because they can't be there for other people at all. It isn't just even about their children or the other parent. It's about anybody. They don't have a moral conscience. And so they live miserable lives, but they don't understand it if they're really to be pitied. Although pity is the number one characteristic that gets us sucked into them, interestingly.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, they have this big sad story, and we say, oh, poor thing, and I'll try and I'll help you. And then, wow.
Well, I'm glad you said that to be pity, because I do think, I do I do prefer to stay in the place that they're really, really unwell, wounded people. I honestly, Jane, I have to tell you, they are so wounded, and you're so right, they do end up dying very lonely lives, because the common characteristics I've seen is that, first of all, they have no peer. They have no peer relationships, because the only way they seem to be able to operate is from a place of power and control.
Right.
And so what happens is that they parent in such a controlling manner, and they live in fear. I mean, it's tragic to see. They live in terror of ever, you know, not having their children. So their children get it at an unconscious level that the parent is emotionally dependent on them, and instead of the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I find... Carry on.
But what I found is that these are people that everyone else is there for the purpose of taking care of the narcissist, borderline, sociopath personality, including the children. And the reason they hang on to their children so much is not because they love them, not at all. It's because they're a meal ticket, or because they're a vehicle to get more of what they want in life. So the child is put in the role of parenting the parent. The child is put in the role of being dominated by the parent. And this is where the brainwashing is so easy to occur in children who are suggestible. So, children, we have to do a lot more to protect our children.
Absolutely, because the fear, what I see, the fear that goes into those children, it may be through physical violence, keeping them controlled when they're young, but even bigger than that, the fear that is so difficult for them to let go is the fear of them withdrawing their love, because that's the way they control very often, you know, is when the kid doesn't do that, or whether the kid shows any maybe affection or whatever for the other parent, even, you know, or wants to be with the other parent. They get the message very clearly and in very subtle ways sometimes that, you know, oh, that's not good. That really is not good. And then and that fear gets so deeply entrenched in the kids that goes right through their adult life.
Right. That's true. And it impacts all of their relationships, and their psychiatric adjustment to life is very compromised. It's a mess. If people want to know more about adult children of parent alienation syndrome, Dr. Amy Baker at Columbia University has just published some very impressively interesting research on what happens to people when they've been alienated like that as a child, and how does their life turn out. And the title is Adult Children of Parent Alienation Syndrome, Breaking the Ties That Bind, Amy Baker. It's very worth reading her research. It's a highly respected protocol for doing research, and it really illuminates the seriousness of how the kinds of challenges that these people have trying to make sense of their adult life when it was so damaged as a child.
And Jane, is that a book, did you say, or is that papers?
Could I what?
Is that a book by Amy Baker, or is it a research paper?
It's a no, it's a whole book. You can get it on Amazon.com.
Okay, that would be great to give that to our listeners again, if you could. The name again, could you repeat that for us?
It's Dr. Amy Baker, Adult Children of Parent Alienation Syndrome, Breaking the Ties Bind.
And that's Dr. Amy Baker, A-M-Y Baker, yeah?
Uh-huh. And people, if they're really interested in this, I do recommend the articles I've written on my site, StopParentalAlienationOfChildren.org. I have several articles there, but the one, if you want to go in more depth, is the causes controversies of parent alienation syndrome. That's an article I'm really proud of. And people have said that, you know, it's very informative, of helping them get up to speed right away. And also, we're working on a DVD on the subject. If anybody wants to be involved in that, we'd love to have your help.
Okay.
A DVD on the subject of it, because so much has been written. Who can read all of everything that's been written?
Exactly.
I'd like to get I'd like to get this DVD out so that people could watch for an hour an explanation of the phenomenon and get up to speed as to what it is and what can be done about it.
That's phenomenal. That would be wonderful because, you know, there's an old adage, and a picture says a thousand words, but if you can get people looking at a DVD, you can...
Right. Called Stop Parental Alienation of Children is the project.
Uh-huh.
It's the worst kind of child abuse known. It's worse because even with sexual abuse, it's horrible. People can recover from that and be okay, but if people have brainwashed a child, they're very rarely okay from that. They've been robbed in a very serious, serious way.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I totally understand that, and I think the anger that that can arise in the targeted parent when they realize what's happened. Because, you know, you were talking earlier about how dramatic and ferocious this can be, but it can also be very subtle, isn't it? You know, I mean, it's insidious is the word that comes to mind for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's insidious, you know.
You're right.
Little tiny put downs about the other parent, about their family members, stuff like that, you
right.
know.
In most divorces, that goes on and it dies off. There are three stages to parent alienation, and the first is that mild stage, a subtle stage. If you get afraid at your daddy's house, you call me right away, okay? You know, is there anybody sleeping in your mother's bed? You tell me if there ever is, okay? That kind of thing that tends to die out. But if it goes into the moderate or the severe obsessed category, it gets to the obsessed category. There is no protocol. There's nothing we know to bring these people back. It's done. And the only thing you can do...
That's a really frightening concept, though, Jane. I mean, do you not feel that everything is healable, that everything on this planet is healable, you know, with the right, you know, the right help?
Well, when it comes to the books I've been reading, that Without Conscience, Robert Hare's book on the psychopath and the psychopath and the sociopath, is no, we don't have a way to heal these people. We don't, in psychology, there's no magic pill. There's nothing that's going to fix them. And that's what I talk about in the article, is that people think, well, if they just go to therapy. But if they're in that category, therapy only makes them worse because it makes them better manipulators. It does not build a conscience. You can't. Once that child is grown, it's a done deal with these people. We don't have any record of them suddenly get kind, unless it's for the purpose of manipulating, winning, and dominating somebody. There are some really disturbed people out there. If one in 25 people are sociopaths, meaning they have no conscience whatsoever, no compassion, no empathy, no sympathy, no pity.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty scary.
Yeah, I guess maybe I'm not an idealist, but I don't know. I think, especially at what we're learning about quantum physics and creating our beliefs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, you know, that I just got to keep open to. You know, this is called Miracle Hour, so I just believe in miracles. But I do put a rider on that. It takes the cooperation, because that was one of the questions I was going to ask you. In your classes, do you ever get like both the warring parents from a divorce working together in a class?
Oh, wow. I had one couple that was so sick and that I just asked them not to come back. I mean, Lord. I mean, they were just so disruptive of the rest of the class, and they're bringing their problems in. I said, you know, now I have two classes. So with those kind of parents, I separate them and put them in different classes. But in the War of the Roses here, no, they can't be in the same class together. Not, no. Once in a while.
And that can happen. Yeah. And I mean, it is very interesting you said about the fact that, you know, if these type of people do get into therapy, sometimes it makes it worse. Yet some of the judgments that have been made, like court orders, insisting that, you know, both parties go into this kind of therapy. And you normally, my experience is the healthy parent is like very eager, will go in and say, yeah, let's see what we can do, and ready to look at themselves. Because it's interesting, everyone has certain traits which fall into some of the traits of borderline or narcissism. Everyone has that. But the real test as to whether you really are one is that a real one would never even consider they are one type of thing. You know what I mean?
Right. Absolutely.
So what happens, the judges are actually doing this. I mean, do you work yourself trying to educate the judges or the legal system at all, lawyers, family lawyers?
I'd love to, but it's really sewn up. I've talked to people who would be in a position to be on the inside track of judicial education, and for the most part, they never get so deep in educating family law judges as to even go into this subject, because in the colleges, they're spending the time just on what are the laws, what's the protocol, to do the job, and they never get into the finer points. It's only the experienced family law judges that are devoted to family law, because here, I don't know about England, but here, judges from civil, criminal, corporate courts cycle themselves out and retire in family law court, because once they retire, they can do private judging for the tune of $500 an hour or more, $600, and they can make their own hours and they can earn tons of money doing it, so they become private judges, and they don't have very much experience at all with families, and they could be coming from a horribly dysfunctional situation, and that person could be a sociopath himself or herself.
You mean the judge?
So it's
absolutely.
We really have to question some of the judgments when the evidence is overwhelming that this person is out of control. I'm working on a case right now where the woman is an absolute, apparently incurable alcoholic drug addict. And the judge said, instead of limiting the child with the daughter, the five-year-old daughter said, she needs to be with the daughter so that she will have a purpose to get sober. You know, she's done horrible things. And the judge, you know, you have to really scratch your head about what is going on with the when a judge would say such a thing. Instead of protecting the child, well, the mother needs to have the child to take care of her to have a reason to get sober. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and that's right. And I saw a piece on the internet about a recommendation made by a top psychologist in Canada, you know, where he was virtually recommending the same thing for a child, you know, because the father, I think it was the father in this case, would be distressed, you know, at not having the child, and would need the child for his own, you know, his own comfort. So, I mean, right there is a red flag.
Yeah, you just shake your head at these decisions.
Yeah.
And they have to go back to court and back to court and back to court.
Yeah.
Here our process is that there needs to be a psychological evaluation of those kinds of families, and that's a whole other wrinkle that could be fraught with trouble. A lot of the evaluators are excellent, and they get it, but... I've got a case right now where the evaluation was excellent all the way through, but the recommendations at the end were as though it was somebody else. The recommendations just didn't fall out as logical.
Yeah.
It was like the evaluator was thinking about someone else when they finished the report. It doesn't hang together.
Yeah. But do you feel that it is a child's birthright to have an equally loving relationship with both parents? Do you come from that place?
Oh, absolutely. The best parent is both parents. The Children's Rights Council of Washington, D.C., that's their motto. I've been a member for years. They're wonderful people. they really get the importance of custody.
Yeah.
And to think that a mother by herself, being a single parent, could take the role of the father is preposterous.
Yeah, and vice versa. You know, Yeah, but you see, this often is the case, I think, is that with the wounded, the people who really, the parents are really wounded, there is something in them that wants to be that, you know?
Right. Right.
And
we should have a presumption of shared custody, which we do in California and have for 27 years.
Did you say, I didn't catch that, Jane, did you say shared custody?
Shared, joint custody.
Yeah, absolutely.
There is a presumption of shared custody, and that's the way it should be. I don't quite agree with the 50-50, because you can't divide a child in half. You know, there's circumstances where you have to work out a timeshare. I've written a book called Creating a Successful Parenting Plan that is a very useful tool to sort out, well, what is the best parent plan?
Yeah.
By the way, if people go to the other website, breakthroughparenting.org, wait a minute. It's breakthroughparentingservices.org. You have to put the services. There's a lot of information there about the breakthrough parenting curriculum, great ideas, as well as the kind of services that I do and the classes that I teach. And we do also do instructor training if people want to start their own classes, and that's all possible.
Yeah, that's wonderful, because that really then, you know, it becomes a growth thing, and parents can start sharing with other parents. I think that's where it becomes a self-supportive thing. It's a very powerful thing, very, very powerful, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And are you at the moment, Jane, are you working, you know, we're talking about the fact that I think, I mean, I certainly believe that all of these cases should be taken out of the traditional legal system until such time, and that may never happen, that they become so trained in the psychological part that should be taken into the realm of mediators who with psychological, you know, serious psychological training. Is that going on in the States at all, do you know?
We legally, in order to get into a courtroom, you have to go through what's called conciliation court, which is an effort to mediate as much as they can in the dispute. And that's been a very successful program. But we just need I think that legally we really need to use that to figure out the financial. But when it comes to the custody of children, I think there should be a whole other model where there's more psychological involvement, more helping the parents working through their complexities, with a professional, and that much more should be made of alternative ways other than going to court. That's just opportunity for a disaster.
Yeah.
Go to court. And that's, unfortunately for my population, most of my population, that's the only recourse they have, because how do you get somebody who's out of control in control without a judicial order? And then even at that, the problem is these are people that think that the law and the rules of society to apply to them. So in order to get them to follow the court orders, many other trips back to court to figure it out.
Yeah, but also what I've seen as well in this case that I'm very familiar with is that the targeting parent, the alienating parent, you know, the really unwell one, you know, we'll actually use the system. We'll be using the law in every kind of the way they can. But unfortunately, it's, you know, with untruths and blatant lies. And if there's any, there's recently, like the children were supposed to be returned back at 6:30 or whatever, you know, and they were 10 minutes late or something. So immediately a request is again put in for saying that the court order was broken. And then the next minute is the judge then withdraws that visitation right of the child without any consideration of the children. I mean, is that not shocking?
Yeah, that's the problem, is that people, the truly healthier parents, really stands a chance with this, the amount of abuse that can go on the part of not only the parents, but the whole structure of the judicial system and the psychologists that go with it. There's it's a big, big, big billion, multi-billion dollar business.
That is shocking. That is really frightening. That is frightening.
Yeah, it's a very lucrative way to make a living. You're charging $350 an hour, $400 an hour, $550 an hour. That is, I don't know what to think about that.
Yeah.
That's just extraordinary.
And that's another thing about the whole thing, that there's got to be a way, I believe, that we've got to push for financial assistance in all of this kind of unraveled
stuff. People wipe out their whole savings trying to protect their children and with very, very mixed results. That's why a business of helping people be smarter about the whole thing, and I think that education is one of the most cost-effective, long-term, successful ways of going about this is to educate yourself about how it works.
And also, you were talking about the importance of understanding, because, like we said, these problems often come where there's a tremendous incompatibility with the parents from day one. And you were saying there's a missing element about the primary relationship in a family and the secondary relationship. Can you explain that a little bit again?
Yes, when parents marry or they're dating or whatever, that's a primary relationship. When a child comes into the family, the child's position in the family ought to be a secondary relationship. The child ought not to move into the role of being the primary focus of the parents. The parents should stay in their primary role with each other, taking care of the child. The child's in a secondary role. What happens in divorces is all the attention goes on to the child. They lose, and that becomes the primary relationship between the parent and the child and not with each other.
Yeah.
So that puts the child in a position that a normal child would not be in.
Yeah, that really rings true with some other trainings that I've done with some people in California, the new couple, and they talk about the king and queen, you know, always having to be on their thrones, and that is the most important relationship in the family structure, because if that relationship is sound and loving and respectful, you know, jointly respectful, and that the children see that, and that's what gives the children tremendous sense of security.
And a foundation which to build their lives.
And of course that's needed in education, you know, generally about relationships, because again, if you haven't come from that model, you're going to draw in that situation again. So, well, there's a lot covered there, Jane, and I'd like if you could, just before we wrap up, you just give out again your two websites, please.
Okay, thank you. It is stopparentalalienation.org and the other one is breakthroughparentingservices.org, and if anyone wants to email me, it's jayne major@gmail.com.
That's fantastic. Well, Jane, this has gone like a fly in the night. I've never done a program where the time has gone so fast, and I was thinking this is going to be a bit too heavy. It might be a struggle. So I really want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. It's been fantastic having you on, and I know Mary and I are keen to get down to see you sometime, because I think we've got a lot to share there, and certainly to support you wherever we can. And I look forward to hearing about the DVD. So very many thanks for coming on the show today, Jane. Thank you.
Thank you. My pleasure. Absolutely. Thank you, John.
Thank you. Have a great evening. Bye-bye now.